Hey everybody, it's Savannah Sanchez and Dara Denny here. We're back for season two of the Purchase Optimized podcast. This has been a long time coming. We've been trying for months to get a new episode with some technical difficulties thrown in, but we have an amazing episode to kick off the second season. So for the first time ever on the Purchase Optimized podcast, we have a guest. And this is a very special guest. This is Adam Simone, founder of Leaf Shave. And he has been a client of mine since 2019, one of my first ever clients that I worked with for Facebook media buying. And now I help him with his TikTok ad creatives and Facebook ad creatives. But he is a founder that I truly admire. He does some really special things, especially when it comes to creating organic content. We're super excited to pick his brain today about all things TikTok, starting a brand, owning a brand, the ups and downs. So this should be a really awesome episode. Hello, Adam. Welcome.
Hello, Samantha. Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here for season two.
So this is actually the first time that Adam and I are meeting. Ever since I think Savannah started working with you guys, I've obviously followed your ad creative journey. I've seen a lot of like what you guys have been doing. But I don't know much about you personally. So I'm kind of curious to learn like how you became a business owner and yeah.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, Adam, I'm a co-founder of Leaf. So I do have another founder at Leaf Shave. His name is also Adam. So we just keep it really simple. We share an email address. We only hire Adams. My partner and I met at the last company that we worked at. We were in the medical technology space. We made surgical robots for orthopedic surgery. I'm a mechanical engineer by training. So is other Adam. And that was a startup. We joined very early in the company, 5 or 6 people. And that company grew to 150 people and had an exit in 2016. It was a successful story for us. And we got bit by the bug of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. But then we also saw the challenges of working within like a highly regulated industry, like medical technology or healthcare. So Adam and I wanted to start a business of some sort, and we wanted to start it outside of the FDA's purview and ideally find something in the consumer goods space and see if we could have some fun there. It was about 2012, actually, where we had the idea of getting into razors because Dollar Shave Club and Harry's, they were like flying at that time. And it made us really grumpy because we as engineers, we could see they were selling the same exact product, just like a little cheaper because they're shipping it online.
And or in pink, they just change the color and then they add like $1 or $2 to the price.
Yeah, it's madness. And we thought like, well, we might actually be able to invent a new kind of razor and bring some technology into it. And if we could, we could carve out a nice little enterprise value for ourselves. And that's what we decided to do. So we set to work. We looked at the landscape of razors. The history is over a century old. It dates back more than 120, 140 years. There's a deep thicket of IP, intellectual property, in the shaving space. And we found a hole. We found a hole that allowed us to take some of the old, the good from the old and the good from the new. The good from the old were traditional safety razors, use these things called safety razor blades. They're very, very low cost, very high quality, readily available. They've been in production for more than a century by dozens and dozens of manufacturers globally. And traditionally, they go into these like old T handles. Your grandfather might have shaved with one of these, you know, back in World War II or World War I or something like that.
They're like silver, right? They like look like aluminum, like really old school.
And they're just steel. Now, those are harder razors to use. And they're primarily made for like shaving a few square inches on your face. And modern razors that we all know and love, they've got multiple blades now for efficiency. They have pivoting heads for safety and control. So we just took the idea of the old school blades, the modern features, and we smashed them together. And we created a new category of shaving razors. These are modern, plastic-free, all-metal razors that are as easy to use, as safe to use as the modern ones that you're used to. The benefits are numerous. They're plastic free, of course. The blades are so cheap and inexpensive. They're pennies, really. So it'll drop your ongoing costs to nothing. And they're beautiful and they'll last a lifetime. So that's kind of the origin story. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. I didn't realize that like shavers have been around for that long, to be honest. I kind of feel like it was like
the first razor was like a sharpened seashell that you would just like scrape off your hair with. Yeah, it's come a long ways. And we like being at the forefront of like engineering new solutions for hair removal. And that's what's gotten us this far so far.
Not to mention, they're just so beautiful, like in ads and in TikToks, like everyone's just like, what is it? It's a silver razor and you have all these new colors now. It just looks so unique. I think that's one thing I've always admired about you, Adam, is like, you're not just a co-founder, you're an inventor. Like you saw a need in the market, you created a completely new product that's different than anything else on the market. I think we see so many brands nowadays, like cosmetics or bedding, they just kind of throw a new logo, fancy website, but same. It's the same skin cream or bedding sheets as everyone else. But what you've done, it's completely brand new product, which I think really
that helps.
That's like
core, not just to the company and like our R&D process, but it's core to our marketing too. Because, you know, we think a great product, a differentiated product, something that's unique and stands out is the best marketing tool you can have.
I agree. Yeah. And like what Savannah said about them being beautiful and like eye-catching, I think that goes a long way when it comes to like making ad creative or scaling with content, not just paid content. Now, something we talked about over email that I wanted to dig into a little bit as well is your choice to go the bootstrapping route as opposed to like finding investors or like taking VC. What went into your choice in doing that?
Well, you know, there's a couple key things that really drove that. One was we had, my partner had experienced a venture-backed company and followed that through an exit. And there were a lot of challenges from the investor base. And that created created unnecessary challenges for the growth of the business in a lot of ways. And I know that there are very supportive investors, and then there are some investors that can cause issues. But we had determined early on that we wanted to own our own destiny and be our own bosses. And that decision comes with like two heavy points. One is you need to be able to fund your business if you're not going to raise outside capital. So we were in a very privileged position to have participated in the exit of that business. And we had some seed capital that we could put in ourselves. So we self-funded it from the beginning. And then we also did a little Kickstarter. So we found some creative ways to bring some money to the business. But then number two is it does change how you run your business and grow and scale and think about scale. Look, we're not a software company. We make literal metal razors. The entirety of our business's capital is tied up in metal somewhere in the world. And as a result, you're not going to scale like a new fangled, I can't even think of the word because I'm such a mechanical engineer, but like a software thingy. And so the result is that you have to grow responsibly. We don't have outside capital that we can spend gobs of money on marketing, which means we need to be profitable in every sale. Every product needs to be profitable. Every sale needs to be profitable. Every period has to be. So we're very conservative in how we spend and grow. And that dictates a lot of what we do. But it's been successful so far. We've been able to scale to a moderate size that we're happy with and continue to grow as we can.
I want to dig in a little bit to like some of the things that have been successful and not successful when it comes to your scale and when it comes to becoming being profitable on every single sale. What are some of the things that you would say that you guys have done over the years that have not been successful?
Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. Not successful. I mean, tons of stuff every day. We waited a little long to hire our first person. Again, we're really, really, really concerned.
Yeah.
We didn't want to bring someone on until we felt we had like the cash flow and the profitability to support that. But our business did start to climb quicker once we started hiring people. Adam and I took it past a million, maybe close to 2 million in revenue, alone plus one person on the fulfillment side. That was a decision that we might have moved a little bit quicker on. Once you hire the first person, it starts to snowball. It's easier to bring people on. You build infrastructure and so forth. Another mistake. What else have we done? Oh, you know, we try things that fail all the time. I actually am more willing to spend money quickly to tell me an idea doesn't work. And that might be like acquisition channel or marketing tactic, or like we tried podcasts, right? And I was like, I'm curious if, like, you know, Harry's is always on podcasts. Will that work for our like $80 razors? A little bit different. And we have like no brand recognition. But you don't want to just, you know, spend a few $1,000 into a podcast channel and I don't know if it works. So we're like, let's give it a budget. I think we budgeted $40,000. We're like, we're gonna go in for business. And we bought like 3 months of ads on some fairly popular podcasts and just didn't work. And so like but I'm more happy doing that than like inching along, always wondering, will podcast for us? We've always been of like, we'll spend money and fail because that will help us like learn things a little bit quicker as long as we have the money.
I think that's so important. I talk to so many potential clients about that, especially when it comes to TikTok ads. And they ask me, what do you think is like a decent budget to spend and how long should we spend before we decide like TikTok's not right for us? And depending on the business, I'll say different answers, but I'll say something to the extent of like, look, let's spend $500 a day. Let's get a ton of ad creatives. Let's ensure the setup's correctly. Let's give it 2 months. And if we can't crack it in 2 months, then you can say, okay, we've thrown a ton of different creative options. We've tried all the targeting. We've seasoned the pixel. Then you can say that you gave it a good shot. But I think too many brand owners, which I completely can understand the struggle, is they'll spend a couple $100 in the first week. They're like, nothing's working. And then they give up. And then it's like, well, okay, well, you can't really say TikTok doesn't work if you didn't even give it a shot.
Yeah. Honestly, that is a symptom of they're probably not ready. They're not ready to expand outside another channel. If you can't allocate the budget to properly test the channel, then you're probably just not ready yet. So stick to where you are until you grow bigger and can. Yeah.
Yeah, I think another thing that I see too is like they will inch along expecting like, oh, if we see results slowly, then we can increase scale. And I think there's something to be said actually about taking your approach that's like, I'm going to do a really concerted effort. And then if it doesn't work, I don't actually have to waste my time trying to figure out how to make it work. And like, it frees you up to take other opportunities or like invest in like double down on what actually is working.
Absolutely. And there's total shiny object syndrome too. Like, let's say I'm only in Meta and I'm like, oh, I got to try TikTok. I got to try Pinterest. I got to try Twitter is now. Like, I'm not motivated anymore to like go chase a shiny object. Like, you know,
so you're not doing Twitter ads right now?
No. I mean, there's plenty of like room to grow where we are in our, you know, free channels, TikTok, Meta, and Google. And so that's kind of where we stand. That makes my life a lot easier. I don't have to like spend intellectual time thinking about it, worrying about it. We actually stopped looking at channel specific results really deeply. And we just look holistically at how the business is doing now, because there's so many touch points anyways in our customers' fairly long journey to get to us that I couldn't tell you after two weeks of trying TikTok whether it works or not, because like, it's just part of the cog of the machine. So we stick to like fairly broad views of how these things are working within Leaf.
I wish everyone thought like that.
Yeah, it would. How do you then make the decision to scale up or pull back on a channel?
Yeah, so we look at like overall budget spend now. So what are we comfortable spending based on our revenue? We look at like a revenue, we look at like unexpected expenses coming, and we adjust the marketing expense to that. And a rough allocation between those three, we keep it at kind of a rough percentage. So if we grow our overall bucket by, you know, 10-15% month over month, then everything is going to grow by 10-15% because we try to keep the ratios roughly the same. Now, what is it based on? Like just where we've gotten. I can't tell you whether our ratios are correct or not, because I don't think there is a definition of correct in this world. It's just
there is not. It is actually a fallacy. Like, yeah. Yeah. And the idea of attribution too is like, you're never going to get it 100% right. And
No. Like, no. And we're more interested in the why often than like the what happens. So that's actually frustrating for us. My founder and I were very in the weeds on like we try to build tests and we're fairly like good at like, we're analytical people. We like to build capable tests. And then we look at the results and we're like, I don't really know. It didn't tell us enough information. We don't have enough information. It's so complicated. There's so many other things happening that it's hard to control and properly actually test. So yeah, anyone who tells you that like they know for sure after a test runs what the answer is, like I just call BS on that. Like maybe they do, but I've never been able to figure out. And maybe I'm a dummy.
Now there's so many variables, and that's something that I think people struggle with is figuring out, okay, what's a statistically significant results? That's number one. Like how much budget, how much time is this like a nuanced result or is this something that's repeatable? But I think especially in like the Twitter marketing world that we all live in, everyone's very quick to share small results. Like, guys, drop whatever you're doing and do this instead. And I noticed that too, in like the TikTok organic space, people are always like, make sure you're posting 10 times a day and then delete it and then repost it and then do this. Like there's all these like small tactics. So, like, yeah, maybe it worked for one person one time, but maybe it was just the algorithm was randomly in your favor that day. Like, is that actually a repeatable thing?
I actually hope people listening, especially if they're like earlier in their journey, understand that, really can try to understand that like all that stuff they're hearing is so, has to be contextualized. And that your context is way different than my context. So, you know, grains of salt with all this advice that comes out, and just try things that work and understand them for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit more about the organic side of things, actually, because I feel like Savannah and I are really firmly in the paid world and like developing creative for paid. That's great. You guys have grown significantly using organic channels and specifically organic TikTok. And I want to dig in a little bit to like your strategy there, but also how you guys got started and why you wanted to get started on organic TikTok.
Okay. Well, the why is easy for me. And I'm really conservative with like how we spend money, and organic is free, quote unquote. It's my time. So it's actually quite expensive, but it doesn't cost me money out of my pocket. So, you know, I believe that a well-rounded marketing mix includes both paid and organic. I mean, ultimately the goal is to expand the number of people that understand what your brand is, know you, understand what you're doing, and end up on your site where you transact, or Amazon, or in stores, whatever your channels are. So, like, you know, I can pay for it, or I can like spend some time and make a video that hopefully reaches people, and both I think need to exist, certainly for us. So I was very interested in building organic because Instagram, we kind of stalled a little bit. This was around the time when like Instagram is, you know, are we all in on video? Are we all in on the video? Like, what are we prioritizing? So I wanted to diversify our organic channel. We all have always had a fairly strong community on Instagram and really great engagement there, but we couldn't find ways to find new people there, truly. And TikTok is magical because every video you post gets, you know, 10% to your audience and 90% new people are going to see it. So what a magical algorithm, for as long as they deem they will allow that to exist for us without having to pay for it. So I was inspired, actually, I mentioned my friend John, who runs Strix, a men's makeup brand, and he did a fantastic job like getting into the organic side for his business and growing that pretty quickly. And I was inspired by it. I thought it was an accessible approach to TikTok. I'm an old man, and so like I didn't, you know, obviously early on all the tropes, like I didn't understand what the kids are up to. But it's such a mature channel now, and it has been for quite a bit of time, that there are any age range, any niche, any whatever interest on there. So I dug in and started making videos. It took a little while, with not too much traction, until we got one pop. One went viral, 5 million views, let's say. So
hell yeah.
And it was a very technical, educational video. I like had these motions, and we exploded plastic razors, and I showed people what was shaving with them and how that compares to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And the moment that hit for me, I got a call or text from my first boss, like who I hadn't seen in 15 years. And he was like, my daughter just showed me your TikTok video and was like, Dad, this is cool. And he was like, I know that guy. So that was my first touch of like, oh, wow, the reach on this is kind of crazy. And ever since that first viral thing got us maybe 20,000 followers, we've been able to like pinball. We've had moments of big growth, moments of stagnation and plateauing. And we're around 300,000 followers right now, which is kind of a vanity metric. But what is important about that is that we get, we can pretty easily garner, like our baseline is 5-10,000 views on a video that doesn't do great, which is awesome. And then the videos that do good get hundreds of thousands. And then we're in the millions with some regularity. So that's been the journey. And it's been really great so far because we do see an appreciable impact on our business when the right videos hit. I've had the videos, I will say like, and again, this is just my experience, but there's both productive viral and unproductive viral. I had a video maybe 5 months ago go like for us the most, like 20 million views in the course of a week, which is really big for us.
Yeah.
And it did literally nothing to our bottom line because it was like this like little ASMR video and it was cute and like interesting to watch, but it didn't tell anyone anything. So it caught like that audience of people who just wanted to like watch it, like worthless to us. And then the, you know, a couple weeks later, you might have one get 500,000 views and actually impact that day's and the couple days later revenue. And that's when it really hit to me, like our sweet spot is education. I'm not here to like entertain you with, I think TikTok has to be entertaining, but I'm not here to like try to go viral by doing like things that make your mind go, blah. I want to tell you about my product and be really honest and straightforward. And those just keep working. So that's where we are.
I've noticed the same thing with my own organic YouTube, not YouTube, but TikTok strategy. I've started posting 3 to 5 times a day on TikTok just to like, you know, that was one of the common things I've heard people say is like, oh, you have to post 3 to 5 times a day to get it to work. And I was like, all right, fuck it. Like, I think I deserve 100K followers on TikTok. Like, let's just try it. And it was amazing to me that, like, number one, the views I was able to get on single videos. Like, I've been on YouTube for 3 years and I've never had a video go beyond 60K views. There's a lot of reasons why that is. You know, it's education, it's kind of niche, it's like about advertising, Facebook ads. But on TikTok, like I've had a few get up to 250K and I'm like, that's crazy. And it's wild too, because the ethos of TikTok that I've understood is like, they're really price sensitive. They, you know, they're not really going to go out and purchase something that is, you know, lower than, they're not going to go out and purchase something more than $100. But like, because of my TikTok, I've actually made way more, like, from my personal business as a consultant over the last 2 months than I have from YouTube. Like, every single person who signs up for a consulting call or, like, wants to do a project, they're all from TikTok, which is probably a factor of, like, just the sheer reach. Like, yeah, like, all of those, like, you know, 500K people who've now seen my videos this month, they're probably not all like super qualified. And there's also a lot of like negative traction that you get from a viral that like snowballs and goes viral. But I've been really impressed with like TikTok's ability to snowball and like to actually find people who are like ready and willing to like be your customer, like on the onset. Like I think TikTokers actually, they want like a quick solution because they're used to quick content. If I can like dig in to like their ethos more. So I always find it surprising that like, you know, they are ready to spend money.
I think, yeah, everything you're saying lands for me. Like Edward, your experience makes so much sense. Yeah, your audience is out there. Like, don't listen to those conventional wisdoms of TikTok people don't buy. That's crazy. TikTok people are everybody. Everybody buys something.
Everyone's a TikToker now.
Yeah. I mean, by channel, our TikTok audio originating, and we only know this from, I have like a general sense of this from post-purchase surveys, but from TikTok, their AOVs are highest, higher than Facebook, higher than Instagram, higher than Reddit, like for whatever reason, I don't know, and you know, validated a couple different ways, but yeah, who knows? It's great. I love the channel for now.
So I have a few questions about your strategy. How often are you posting?
I've gone through bouts. Recently, I just went through 20 days posting twice a day just to like see what that kind of concise activity would do. But I've also gone through stretches of like maybe once a week, and I've even like forgot about it for a couple weeks because we get busy. I'm the only one in the company who posts on it. So yeah.
Are you the only creator for it though? Like who creates Interesting. So you
We do mix in some content sometimes, like some, you know, a Savannah makes content for us. We got some creators and like, we'll try to post those, but it just never does as good as like the stuff that I make, whether that's because I'm a familiar face or I just know the stuff so good, so ingrained that I maybe I'm just more conversant in it. I wish I knew. I wish I could hand it off to someone, but for now it's just me. But yeah, so the cadence has always been kind of up and down. What I've noticed though is after this 20 days of twice a day, I got probably about as productive output from those 20 days as I would have gotten from posting maybe a couple times a week over a 20 day period. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've looked for patterns in, you know, let's say I post 10 videos, seven of them are going to be like duds, so to speak, at the minimal amount of views. You know, one's going to go to a few hundred thousand. Two will go to a few hundred thousand, one will go to a million. And that's kind of like for every 10 videos, that's, let's say that that's the breakdown. When I went to twice a day for 20 days, it didn't follow that pattern. Over 20 days, I got, you know, two that went to a few hundred thousand and two that went to a million. So it seemed like I just got, like, you're pulling the lever every time you post. And maybe because I was doing so much, my quality or ideas were lower per video.
Yeah.
More videos to get like find the one that would reach the audience. I don't know what the reason is, but I did find like a similar result. So I might like pull back from that twice a day. Probably it's a big schedule for me, and get the same result with less work. I don't know.
How long does it take you to make like a single TikTok? And are you scheduling your ideas ahead of time, or is it because when I'm doing TikTok now, like I literally have no idea what I'm gonna make. I'm just like, I just sit down. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to think of something clever. Maybe I'll like Google some viral hooks and like start from there. Or like if there's I have a few formats that I just know crush. So if I don't have any ideas, I just like default on that. But I would say for me, it's like, I don't plan at all. And I'll sit down and I'll probably take 5 to 10 minutes to come up with my like script and just riff. Produce, edit, and then post. Like, it's not taking me any more than that time.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I was that quick. It takes me longer, but I have a very similar approach. Like, I don't pre-plan. I honestly probably only make the same 10 videos over and over again. Repetition is not on TikTok. I just like do it different ways. Because there's like 10 basic talking points about our company and products. And I know the ones that like do better. Like, I know like if... I know that a response to a comment always does better than a native video with no response to a comment for us. So I most of my time is spent like hunting for the right comment that fits what I want to make that day. And, you know, we get thousands of comments a week. So there's plenty to like pick from, which is great. And they're fairly repetitive. But for a good example is like our product costs, you know, razors an $80 razor. So it's a little forefront. We often get questions about the price. And I know if I make a video that's a little bit like sassy about the price and I respond to a comment and I like tell a story about the price and why we are what we are, it's 60 seconds long. Those always absolutely crush. And the positive responses tend to be like, this is a good ad, or like, wow, I've never seen someone explain it like that before. And I'm like, well, if you scroll back 10 videos, you'd see it. And
exact same thing. Yeah.
So are you saying you don't have to reinvent the wheel? Like once you start posting, you find your formulas that work and then you can just do iterations off of that. You don't have to be on every trend or do something crazy. It sounds like you're just doing educational content, replying to comments, explaining the value props. You make it sound too easy, even though I know it's not.
Yeah, I would agree. That's a good summation. We don't even like, I don't even touch the trends because I'm too old to understand them. But like, you know, I don't know how to use them. So yeah, I just stick to what I know.
I love that. And one thing that I think as someone that's listening to you and Dara, and I am not posting on TikTok at all, for the reason I think a lot of brand owners would say is like, how do you find the time? And like, as many brand owners think this way of, if I can't see the immediate ROI, then I'm not going to do it. And TikTok is a longer game. So I'm wondering, how do you prioritize posting to the Leaf TikTok account so often, but also replying to comments? You are the one that's replying to every comment, really being engaged with the community. someone would just be like, oh, you're crazy for doing all that. So why do you do it?
We've been together for a long time. And I remember early on in our, when you were buying media for us, like you made a comment like, what are you doing? I've never seen someone respond to every comment. I was like, I didn't know any different. So I've actually had a very hands-on perspective from the start. I'm an absolute workaholic. Like I live, eat, and breathe my company. I think about it all the time, and I don't have a problem with that. I have a very balanced personal life too, but I'm like in it, and I love being in the weeds. And I've got a team that doesn't need a lot of like oversight, which allows me to be in the weeds right next to them, which is great. I will respond to, and if I fail to respond to every comment, it's only because I accidentally missed it. But my goal is to get in there and give a thoughtful response. If they're being like jerks back to us, I'll probably match their energy. And that sometimes works. Sometimes that backfires and I'm quickly the block button.
I'm quickly learning that actually. I clap back on TikTok. It's like my own little like form of therapy. Like,
yeah, you walked into my store like, and you start shit talking me. Give you the boot out the back end. But I prioritize it because I think it's so important. I mean, we forget sometimes, especially as like a business grows, like it's, you know, the month's sales isn't like some random like, oh, 10,000 people bought this month. That is the goal. No, it's 10,000 individuals who buy it. And so every comment is a potential individual in the 10,000 or whatever your number happens to be. And so you should treat them as if they walked into your clothing store. I always think about our comment section like we're a boutique on the side of the road in Pittsburgh or whatever. And someone came in and they had the gumption to say something. They asked a question. They were like, well, that looks weird or something. And I'm not just going to sit back there as the person minding the store and hope that they come up with the answer. I'm going to walk up to them and introduce myself and I'm going to answer their question. So that's how I think about it. And that's why I do it.
I think the feedback loop on that too is like, you must, like if you ever post something or if you have an ad, it like, and there's some kind of misunderstanding, I feel like you're so able to like act quickly and like understand like what you should learn from like what you're posting, whether or not it's organic on the or on the paid side, instead of seeing it in some like pitch deck that an agency gives you like 2 weeks later. Like,
yeah. Oh, the feedback loop is instantaneous. Like we'll put an ad up. It happened the other day. We had an ad go up and it was a little aggressive. We had like a little side by side, our razor, the Billy razor. People really love that dang Billy razor.
Oh, yeah.
most of our customers actually come from Billy. So like that's one of the reasons we tend to use that razor in our ads, because from my perspective, it becomes a really familiar, you know, thing. We don't call them out by name usually. And, you know, we just like explain the difference between a plastic razor and like a forever leaf razor. But there's a lot of Billy evangelists. And on this ad, I was a little aggressive with the copy on it, or whatever it might have. And, you know, that came out in the comments and to the point where, like, actually I actually had, like, a very thoughtful back and forth with this woman who I thought made some very valid points about how she felt about us, like, putting these things side by side. And I ended up taking the ad down because I didn't feel great about that. But it was because I got to experience that. And honestly, if it was someone on my team who like raised the point, I probably would have, it would take a lot longer to figure out what the problem was. If there was a problem, I may not have felt it as deeply. I'm like in the trenches with our customers and I just love it.
I think that's why you're so successful, among a million reasons why. You have a great product and great team and great everything. But I've worked with maybe 200 brands in the last couple of years, and no one is in the trenches with your customer as much as you, like truly thoughtful responses to every comment since I've been monitoring your comments since 2019. And I think that helps you. I mean, I'm speaking for you, but let me know. Like when you're creating TikTok organic content, I feel like it's that much easier because you're like, I know the biggest pain points. I know what people are asking. I know how to address it because you've responded to these same questions thousands of times of, yeah. Why is this worth it? How is this different than my other razor? Is this, I mean, I think that's what everyone wants to know at the end of the day. Is this actually worth spending money on? And you've addressed that 1,000 times over.
And I will 1,000 times again.
And I think that's an unfortunate thing I do see with brands when they're like scratching their heads, like, why aren't our ads working? I'm like, well, what are your customers saying? Like, are they saying it's too expensive? Are they saying it never arrived? They're upset with the customer service. Like, what are the customers saying?
It blows my mind when I see ads from small companies and large companies that have a bunch of comments and no responses, and like five of them are trashing the company. I'm like, what? How are you leaving this up? That makes no sense to me. You're just wasting your money on ad. You're just like, you're losing that extra 5% lift you'd get from having an engaged comment section or whatever that number happens to be. I don't know, but yeah.
It's one of those small things. It seems like a small thing that it actually isn't a small thing, because the right critical comment will tank your ad performance in an instant on an ad that's built up tons and tons of social proof. Like, I've seen it a number of times where we have like a hero unicorn ad. It runs for a few months. I've even seen one that got tanked after running for a year because of one critical comment. And like, yeah, like you can delete it, sure. But if you actually like facilitate this engagement and this kind of community inside of the ecosystem of a single ad that's already doing well, like that's good. Like that is a tactic to increase your conversion rates.
Yeah, it is. It straight up is. And eventually your customers will come to you, your defense. And I don't know. Yeah. Being in there every day, I see common names. Like, I've never met these people, but I know, like,
you know Don,
literally every ad. So every now and then I'll be like, what's up, Don? How's life? Like in the comment section, I don't know. It creates like a more human approach. We're just people behind a company. So you might as well try to act like one.
Yeah, I think it's. I think a lot of business owners would hear this and like ask, "Is that scalable?" What would you respond to that?
I mean, we're doing okay, and so I think, yeah. Unless you're of a pretty good size, if you're asking that question, try harder.
Find more hours. No, I can relate to that so much. I mean, running my small agency, and I'm still talking to every client, involved with every ad. People are like, how are you going to scale? I'm like, I don't want to scale. Like, I like being involved. And that's why the quality is so good. It's because I am involved. And I feel the same for you. Like, you have built your tribe based off of building the community. And if you just hand it off TikTok to someone else, they're not going to have that same touch as you or understanding as you. So it's not something that can be easily outsourced.
No. I look forward to the day, but so far it's a tough one. It's fine. I enjoy it. Yeah, this is great. I love talking about organic. Thank you guys.
Yeah, of course. Now it's like I said, I've only been going hard on like organic TikTok for the last month. And it's like kind of crazy. Like the highs are high. The lows are low. The comment section is wild. People can be ruthless. But it's also just that it's made so many fast connections with like brands that I never thought that I would talk to. Like brands I've been following for years, reach out to me and be like, oh, like let's talk like that. And it's like, damn, like the production quality is not like impressive on my TikToks by any means. I'm not doing anything special there. I found interestingly enough, replying to comments does not do so well for me. Maybe that's just my approach and the way that I do it. But like, and it's kind of like the same key points over and over that tend to have a certain viral effect. Mm-hmm. And the sassiness is like what people want. Like it's, I don't always wake up every day and like have something where I'm like, all right, I got something to like dish about. But the days that I do.
Yeah, you got a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah. The days I do, TikTok's popping. Have you been taking then the content that you're doing on TikTok and just posting it all to Reels, posting it all to Instagram? Like, what's your strategy for that?
Well, the most interesting content we make is on TikTok. So that does find its way to Reels with just a much lower frequency. Because our community on Instagram, they're super engaged, but like I don't need to be in their face every day like I typically can be on TikTok. So I like pick and choose the best of the best or the right messages for Instagram. And the other thing that I do, I do post to Shorts, YouTube. Those don't do super well with us. I haven't really focused too much at all on the channel, but every now and they'll do okay, but it's free posting, so I get it up there. But the thing I really leverage the TikToks for, the best organic TikToks get turned right into ads. So those find their way over to, I mean, I'll run them as ads on TikTok, fine, but I'll move them over into Meta. I'll tweak them a little bit and like, you know, play around and then, you know, make sure I have the right sizes for both versions. But yeah, those are our best performing ads too. It's great to mix stuff in. We have to keep that machine with fed with a bunch of different options. And that's where like Savannah's content, your content comes in great handy. It helps make fill the gaps. And every now and then one of those will pop too. But still, it's like our organic TikToks. They're just so authentic, I think. And they just land great, even as an ad.
So what kind of criteria are you looking out for on organic TikTok that you're like, oh, this is what I'm going to turn into an ad? Like, are the...
It's not complicated. If it goes, it goes. Like, even if it's like kind of a stupid one and you wouldn't think it would make a good ad, we still try it.
That's like, good.
So, I had one where I was just shaving my arm hair and it went like pretty viral on TikTok. I was just like shaving my arm hair. I think it went a little viral because I could tell in the comments people think you're like scaling a fish at first because it was like kind of a cool
stuff.
I thought that was kind of funny. So it's a little eye-catching. So I made that into an ad. And it doesn't really say much about the product, but it shows it in use and it's got a bit of a catch because like unexpectedly, not a fish, but a male arm. And yeah, so that's how I pick them.
I'm so glad that you said that. I've had a number of clients try some of their organic TikToks. And there's been a few cases where inside of the ad or like the organic TikTok originally, it doesn't mention the brand name. It doesn't even mention the product, but it is somehow educational about the niche or like broader problem. And that is what like right now I see really performing and popping off on like Meta ads, which is really incredible. And I'm excited about because it really is this content first approach instead of like problem solution, direct response ad, like, you know, catchy hook, really annoying, hate this problem, introducing Piranha.
Yes.
You do. You absolutely do. Yeah.
But you have to, I love the idea of mixing that just like pure educational, like different stuff. Like I have plenty of ads that run that don't have a CTA, which maybe because I'm a little lazy sometimes when I edit them, but they're part of the universal system, you know. Our Advantage Plus campaign figures out where it wants to spend.
Right, yeah.
Mixing and matching, and you know, our customers get hit with a bunch of different ads anyways along the journey, so I know they'll hear our name eventually. I don't know, it works so far.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's why I also encourage people to get on organic TikTok and especially founders. I've given that advice actually to a few of my clients who I think could take up the challenge. And it's been really fascinating to kind of see this founder to creator pipeline that then feeds back into the business. And I feel like it gives you like a really good basis and also understanding for how to hire creators, how to work with other creators in your brand and how to like write those proper briefs. Cause you've like done it yourself and like you've been in those
trenches. It's so hard to work with the creators. Like it is so hard. That's why like working with Savannah is great. Cause like, I don't have to do anything.
Thanks, Adam.
We keep a couple creators too, like on tap, but it's so much work. And that is the only part of our business that we have any agency outsourcing in. So,
do you do your media buying internally then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very it's cool. Gotten so much stream. It's so much streamlined. Everyone, like, all, you know, all these platforms are like streamlining into those machine algorithms. And
just upload your videos and your copy and your landing page and let the algorithm do the rest. We always have these conversations about like, are media buyers going extinct? And I think a lot
kind
of them, yeah, in a way, yes, a lot of brands are taking it. Like, that's something I hear all the time. Like we had an agency and then we just took it in house and figured it out. And it wasn't that hard. And then agencies are like, oh crap, people are figuring out. Cause it used to be so much more difficult. Like it used to really be a special skill, like Facebook media buying, Google, like there's all these bidding strategies and tactics and things, but Facebook wants everyone to be able to advertise on there. And same with TikTok. Like we want to make it easy for anyone without experience. We can't have it be some gate kept skill to get more brands to spend money. So
have you worked with the new TikTok smart shopping, whatever?
Yes. Yeah, so the smart performance campaigns, that was all the rage on TikTok or not on TikTok, on marketing Twitter over the last couple weeks.
Right? Yeah.
And I kind of made a hype post about it because, you know, I'm always trying to get viral content out there. I'm like, oh, everyone's talking about smart campaigns. So I made a post about it, explaining what it was, saying I was going to test it. And I tested it and it didn't do well at all. So I kind of, so I posted on Twitter. I was like, you know, I tested this so far, not great. And still it's
measuring like performance as what, like ROAS or?
Yeah, like CPA, like comparing it to like the account level CPA. So right now it's about like 50% higher than the account level CPA. I just put some new creatives in there yesterday that I think are better than the ones I originally chose. So I'm going to give it some time, but have you tested it?
Yeah, that was the reason I asked. They just opened it up to me. My rep got that, got me in there. So I don't know. And I don't, maybe they didn't. And they, I always had it and they wanted to sound fancy, but I haven't tried it yet. I've been like meaning to give it a go, but also a little bit nervous because like what we got rolling is working. So yeah, I don't know. I like the idea and I'm sure they'll continue to work on it because like it's obviously the future. But yeah, bummed to hear that it didn't like fly out of the gates.
It did the same
thing. Yeah, it was the same thing for some of the brands we tested it on. Like we were seeing anywhere from like 50, even like 100% like more than like the CPAs in platform. I think it'll kind of be like Advantage Plus. Like people were really sus on it at first. I feel like Advantage Plus is like what now, like 3 to 6 months old, but now we're all like, yes, this is working. This is great. But I remember like we first, I think we even tried it out in beta and I was like, this is hot garbage. Like, and what I find too with things like that is like sometimes with Advantage Plus, like it takes a week or two to like pick up steam and like the algorithm to adjust and like for it actually to start working. Like, I also wonder like for, you know, this TikTok Smart, if like we should let it run at a small budget and see if like sort of like those old hackery style media buying tactics like could possibly work there to like get it like some steam. But yeah, got it. I try season it.
Season it.
Yeah,
get some salt. No, I'm excited to see what happens. I have one client, I'm spending $2,000 a day on it. They're down to let it just sit there and test, and we're going to have our business as usual running alongside of it. But I just launched it with new creatives yesterday. I keep peeking back to see what's happening. So I'm hoping to report a success story maybe on the next episode, but I'm interested to know what happens with yours too. Once you launch it, you'll have to give us a Twitter update.
Yeah. I'll let you know. I'll tweet. No one listens. So
I listen.
That's good to know. You're one of the ones. Yeah, it's all very interesting. I like when people are willing to share these things. You know, I take a grain of salt anything I read on Twitter usually. So I prefer to like talk to someone I trust and see what your experience is.
Yeah, that's what I always tell my clients. I have some that will come to me and be like, oh, I saw this on Twitter. Like, should we try it? And I'm like, let's wait. I don't know if that's like the best way to go about it.
Sage advice.
It's finding a balance of like wanting to test new things, but then not like ditching. Like you said, things are working well for you. So why ditch your current campaign structure for something untested if what you're doing is working? So
yeah,
I try to bring that perspective. Like, don't touch it. It's working. Don't do anything.
Awesome. Well, Adam, it's been awesome having you on the show. Like I said, this is the first time that we met, so it was awesome to jam about all things organic and content with you. Any parting thoughts?
Ooh, well, first of all, thanks for giving me the opportunity to jump on with y'all. This is so fun. I haven't done a podcast, and I did two this week. I haven't done one in years, and I felt like I wanted to like get out there and meet some people and talk a little bit about what we're doing in case that's helpful to people. Anyone listening who wants to hit me up, I'm on Twitter at ADMSimone, S-I-M-O-N-E. I rarely tweet, so I'm not really worth a follow, but yeah, if you want some grumpy advice, I'm happy to give it to you with a full grain of salt. That is just what we do. I have no idea if it'll work for you. And that's what I try to tell everyone.
I appreciate that caveat. That's never said by anyone else. So, and what about Leaf Shave? Where can we learn about all the great things Leaf Shave?
Yeah, if you need a good shave, especially if you're like eco-friendly and trying to ditch plastic in your routine, come to leafshave.com. We're not a men's or a women's grooming company. We have something for everybody. So head to toe and in between, we'll find a razor for you. We just launched a dermaplaner like a month ago. It sold out immediately. It's coming back in a couple of weeks. I don't know when this will air, but hopefully it's back by the time this airs. And the dermaplaner's crushing it for like folks into skincare. Yeah, that's Leaf Shave. I hope you check it out if you're interested.
Definitely check out Leaf Shave. I will say, click on an ad if you see one. Buy from the ad. I always tell people, I'm like, if you're going to buy from one of my clients, make sure to click on the ad first. Get that ROAS up. Post a comment. And also check out Leaf Shave's TikTok, since you guys are crushing it and growing so much. So I'm sure so many brands can learn from the strategies that you've been implementing on the TikTok account.
Well, thanks, guys.
See you next time.
See you next time.
How do we stop recording?